We're talking about, actually today what we're going to do is we're going to be looking at imagery, especially we're going to start with the guided imagery. And the first thing that I want to do is I've asked Cindy and Leah if they would be, I think I asked you, Leah, I know we talked about it, if they would be willing, before we start with the more what I'm giving to you, just a brief report about, it was Wednesday when we went through a kind of a go back into the room experience, and just any feedback about anything that happened then or later, what that was like or what it is like for you now after we've done it. Cindy, would you just be willing to share a minute or less or so, sure, or more?
Well, I think I was really motivated to share in that experience because I have done some work in terms of my relationship with my mom and all. And so some of the results of that was a new information to me, but the experience was certainly new. And I really wanted to make the most of it and try and separate kind of what I've known from having babies and reading all about babies versus just allowing to kind of go through the process fresh, maybe without any other ideas. And I saw myself, after the experience, trying to separate maybe what was, again, what was perhaps a real experience for me versus what I knew. And I think I shared that with Doe. She's not here this morning, but she said something really good to me, and she said, Cindy, remember Jerry, right at the beginning, asked you to use your imagination and to imagine things and try to get into it. And she said, you can't separate you from your imagination. Your imagination is part of you. And that was just so validating for me, you know, to think that, wow, that maybe that whole picture is perhaps what the experience was like for me. So that's just a little bit of the processing for me. But I think the initial response was a real exhilarated feeling. I don't know, like maybe if I were into bungee jumping and I'd, you know, bungee jump for the first time and survived it, you know, you just think, wow, I did it. It was kind of like that. And I was really happy to be a part of that. Got a lot of support from people here, so that was nice. That made it not so scary to be revealing that one.
Okay, thank you. I want to make just a comment before I ask Leah for a similar kind of summary. People oftentimes, when we interpret dreams, have that same comment, the question about whether my dream is just my imagination or whether it's something valid to look at. And every time I've ever done any dream interpretation with people, their end result is to realize that their imagination in some ways might be more powerful and more who they really are than something that was a literal, real event. And we may get into that today. It's one of the things that I, if we have time, we'll move into some dreams. So. Yeah, how about you? Do you have anything to add to what you did while you were here?
Well, after I talked with you that evening, I talked with some of the women that were in the group, and we shared some experiences, and that helped further along my experience because it helped me see some things that I hadn't seen before. And I felt like I put some things together in my life, and I know some things now that I didn't know before. And I really believe that that experience was true, not true in all ways, but true to me, and that I got a bunch of stuff out of it that is going to help me in my future, I think, in the present situation here. And I just think that it really opened a lot of doors for me. And I've never done anything like that before, nor have I given birth, or I didn't know much about my birth. So it was kind of a refreshing experience nonetheless, and I'm hoping to talk to my parents soon in a letter to see what really happened. And maybe discuss it with them in letters, which is more detailed, I think, now than talking to them on the phone could ever be. So
the thing that was the most impressive for me as we went through this, which I have no idea whether it meant anything to you at all, is your desire when you got here to cry out loud and say, basically, I haven't listened to you folks. listen to me, here I am.
Yeah, that was really funny.
It was just so, you know, I really liked that. It was just...
probably what happened. Most likely.
Okay, any other thing unfinished about that before we move on to something else? Something else that I want to move on to first, and I'm hoping that we're going to have time, I'm quite sure we will have time to do a couple different things. In talking with Leah about her experience, one of the reasons why she wanted to do that, and that was clear as we did the work, is you said that there were some decisions that you had to make about life now. And I discovered that that's something that is true of a lot of people. There are certain decisions that they might want to make about life now that will impact their future. And so I want to do a guided imagery that allows people, I've done this many, many times, hundreds of times, and always, if I ever do it with more than one person, there are always people who just have a great deal of benefit from this, so I want to do that with you. And let me explain briefly what this is, and then I'll invite each of you to participate in this guided imagery in a way that... I could do this in two ways. I could bring somebody up here and do it with them one-on-one and they would get a great deal out of it. Or do it with a whole group and just wait for the timing. Some people would be faster and slower than others. And I think I'd rather do it with a whole group so you all have a chance to experience this. The guided imagery goes like this. I'm going to ask you in about 2 minutes to imagine yourself at an airport terminal where you can board a large aircraft. And at that point, I'm going to ask you to bring on board everybody that you would like to travel with you for the next 5 years. This journey is going to be a journey in time more than in space. We're not going anywhere except into the future. The plane is going to take off and head east, so that every time you cross a time zone, your watch goes ahead an hour. We're just going to go so fast that pretty soon your watches are just whizzing ahead. And pretty soon you'll be a year, and then 2 years, and then 3 years. We'll go 5 years into the future. And when we get there, everybody's going to have a chance to find a full-length mirror where you can see yourself in that mirror, but you'll be 5 years older. And there'll be many questions that I'll suggest to you that you might ask this person 5 years from now about your life this past 5 years. We'll ask about the mistakes you made, the best thing you ever did for yourself during these 5 years, and something about your life situation. And then you'll have a chance to wander through the plane and talk with anyone you might have brought along with for their input and for you to ask questions or whatever. And you'll be able to bring along with you anybody that you want to. You can bring Jesus, you can bring the smartest person in the world, maybe Albert Einstein or whoever. You can bring the most loving person in the world, the Mother Teresa or whoever. You can bring any friends or family. And you can leave behind anybody you don't want to be with you.
What a plan.
I have never done this yet, to my knowledge, where there hasn't been quite a bit of good information that comes forward, and we'll spend a little time talking about that after we do it. Is there anybody who needs to know more information before we begin?
Could we lie on the floor if we prefer?
You can do anything we want. Yeah,
as opposed to sit on the chair.
You do not have to sit on these chairs.
They are not good anyway.
No. All right, well, do whatever you want as far as where you sit. This ordinarily takes about 15 minutes. It might take a little longer.
For 5 years.
How many people do you want to have in their
experience? It's totally up to you. You will determine your own entry on your own.
And then we say we spend 5 years. Okay.
What will happen is this plane will go so fast that you'll be 5 years in the future within a minute or so. You're not going to get off it.
You're not going to get off it.
No, you're going to stay there and then we're going to come back. You won't even get off the plane, you're just going to travel 5 years into the future. When you are 5 years in the future, this person in the mirror will know everything that's happened in the last 5 years. And so you can ask her, what happened? And then there'll be a point in the follow-up from the meditation where you can see that you'll have a choice to do it differently if you want to, if you didn't like the outcome 5 years from now. You have a chance now to do it differently.
What about the people you take with you? How are they supposed to? I don't quite get how.
Have you ever done a guided meditation? Well, I think you'll find this interesting then. I'll give you enough direction as we go to help answer some of these questions, but if you have any, ask them. One of the things that you'll notice when we do this with the group is that some people will be much faster than others. And if you're faster than someone else, just spend that time. If you've ever taken a real airplane trip, you know how sometimes you just wait for the plane to get its engine started, or you wait on the runway before you can take off, or you wait. Just feel like you're on a real airplane, and if you have to wait, this is just part of the trip. Because we'll wait for everybody to get to the next plane. Okay, are we ready to begin? What I want you to do is get comfortable enough so that your body won't need to take much of your attention in the next 15 minutes, that you can spend most of your attention in your mind. And I'm going to ask you to find yourself at a terminal, an airport terminal, and then entering a large airplane, a large jet aircraft, and finding yourself on board the aircraft as the only person on board, but there are a lot of empty seats. And when you are able to do that, when you find yourself on board the aircraft, could you signal me by, I don't know, maybe lifting a hand or something so I know that you're there. Okay? And I'll wait till everybody's there before we continue. When you're on the aircraft and you're the only one on board and you see all these empty seats around you, raise your hand. Okay, we're all there. Okay. Oh, did I catch you? Are you there? Okay, all right. Now what your job is, you're on board the aircraft. I want you to bring on board with you absolutely everyone you would like to take this journey with you for these next 5 years. You might start thinking through your mind about family and friends, about people you've read about or heard about. These can be people who died a long time ago. It could be grandparents, it could be Jesus, it could be anyone at all. Anyone. Could be a fictional person. It doesn't have to be real. It could be one of the Ninja Turtles or something. Yes. Your question is? Or are you already?
No, I don't have a question. I'm just looking at you.
Okay. And this may take a little longer, but when you have everyone on board that you want to take this trip with you, then I want you to seat them on the aircraft so that they can fasten their seat belts and the plane will soon be able to take off. When you have everyone on board with you, would you raise your hand again so I can tell when that happens? And feel free to take some time in this. When you have brought on board everyone you want to make this trip with you, just raise your hand so I know that we're at that stage. Okay, about half of you are already there, so another minute or so. I think all but three have raised your hand, so all but two now. Okay, I think there's just, let me test. If you are there, would you raise your hand again? Some of you raised it and let them down. I think we're all there. Okay, we're all there. Now what I want you to do is to get in your seat and fasten your seat belt. Make sure that everyone you brought on board has fastened their seat belt. And now the flight attendant comes into the cabin or into this place you are and starts giving the safety features of the airplane, and your seat belts are fastened now. The engines have revved up. And we're pushed away from the terminal, we're going on a taxiway. The pilot then calls over the intercom that we've been cleared for takeoff, and we get on the active runway. The engines get very loud, the plane rushes down the runway, and if you're near a window, you can see out the window that the land is beginning to disappear as we raise high into the sky and we turn east. And as we turn east, the plane gains altitude and speed, and we're starting to go very fast. And your watch can be set ahead an hour because we've crossed the time zone. So we're 1 hour into the future now. And the plane goes faster and faster, and pretty soon your watch just sets ahead hour after hour until a day, and then a week, and then a month have gone by, and we're a month into the future, and then 2 months. And the plane reaches its cruising altitude, but its speed still increases and goes faster and faster until a whole year, and then 2 years, and then 3 years, and then 4 years have gone by, and then the pilot comes on the intercom and says that we're cleared for landing, and we begin our descent, and the flaps come down, the wheels come down, and pretty soon we touch down just at 5 years from when you took off. The plane goes down the end of the runway and off onto the taxiway, and taxis to a terminal, and the engine shut off. But it isn't time to get off because we're not going to get off. But what you can do is unfasten your seatbelt and begin walking through the plane until you come to a place in the plane where there is a full-length mirror. It's perhaps in a lounge on this very large aircraft. And as you look into the full-length mirror, you discover that your image in the mirror is 5 years older than it was when you took off. That you are 5 years into the future, and this person in the mirror now knows a lot more than you did at takeoff about these next 5 years. This image in the mirror is looking back on the 5 years from when you took off and knows what happened. And so I want you to ask first this question of the person in the mirror. What is it that I did during these 5 years that was the best thing I could have done for myself? What was the most healthy, best decision, best action that I took during these 5 years? What did I do that helped me the most, that was the best and happiest and most right decision that I made? What was that? And when you get a certain clear answer from that question, would you again just raise your hand so I know that you have an answer? Several of you already do. Okay. Okay, there's about five people yet who don't know, and we'll just wait for them. Still four people yet that we'll wait for a while. There's still two people that haven't raised their hands yet, so we'll just wait a minute. Well, these two people are still waiting for that answer. You two just stay right where you are until you get your answer, and the rest of us will move on to the next question. And when the two of you get your answer, we'll move to the next question at that point for you two. Next question is, what's the biggest mistake I made these 5 years? What is it I did that I wished I had a chance to do over again because I do it differently? During these 5 years, what's the thing I did that I regret? And when you get an answer from this image in the mirror for that question, just let me know again by raising your hand. Okay, was a quick one. Many of you have your hands up really quickly on that one. Almost everyone has their hand up. For those who don't, just join us when you can and we'll let the rest move on. But I'm going to ask, and we'll wait until everyone has had a chance to do this. I want you to ask this figure in the mirror any question at all about your current situation 5 years from now. Who you're living with, what you're doing, what you're, how you spend your time. Whatever it is that might be of value for you to know. Because the answer this person will give you is an answer that's projected from your imagination and is usually pretty accurate unless you make some definite decision to change the way in which your life is headed. So ask this person about your life experience 5 years from now and ask whether you're happy. Take a look, in fact, at the expression on the face in the mirror. Is this a happy person? A healthy person? And listen to the answer about what your situation is and think about whether it's the way you want it to be. And when you get an answer about the things that you're most interested in, just let me know again. What you're doing, who you're with, where you're living, whatever. And are you happy? Most of you are pretty quick about this. A lot of you are just so fast in bringing your hands up. There still are a few. I said we'd wait for everyone, and I'm kind of changing my mind because it's easy for you all to catch up. What everyone can do as soon as you're ready is to walk through the plane and notice several things. These are the things for you to notice. Notice where you have sat people from your imagination. Who's sitting closest to you? Are these the people you want closest to you? Think about it. What about the people who are sitting furthest away from you? What does that mean? What about the people who are there that as you look now you're surprised that you brought them along? And what about the people you left behind? Are there any of those that you wish were there? And what about the people that you brought on board that might have died during these 5 years and now seem less there for you because they may have died during those 5 years of the trip? And as you think about all those things and as you walk through the plane, notice who it is that you would most like to spend a minute or so in conversation with. If you brought along a very powerful person, such as Jesus, or someone else who could be a guide for you or have some knowledge that you might need, you might spend now a minute talking with them and thanking them for being with you on this journey, but asking from them anything that might be of value for you. And this might take a while now for you to look through the plane and talk with anyone or everyone that you want to. And so I'll plan on this taking 2 or 3 minutes. And in about a minute and a half or so, I'll ask if anyone is done yet. So for the next minute and a half or so, just be with yourself and with whoever it is you want to have a conversation with that's on the plane. And then when you feel that you've done this and are ready to sit back in the plane and fasten your seatbelt so we'll take off and come back to the present, when you're ready to do that, would you signal me? No hurry at all. But when you're ready to get back into your seat, just let me know by raising your hand. Okay. About half of you are ready already. on this trip, we'll wait for everyone to get ready to come back before we come back, though. If by chance you happen to feel that you already are back, that's fine too, but we'll wait until everyone's ready and then we'll start the cleanup again. Still four people, and I think we'll wait for them. Three people now, two people now. I think that we're only waiting for one person at this point, but we'll wait. Cindy, did you want to hear more? And we're on here. Okay, so let's just take a few seconds to get back. Fasten your seat belts now. Make sure everyone that's with you has their seat belts fastened. And now the flight attendant again comes out and reminds you of the safety features of the plane and whatever. The engines start. We're pushed away from the terminal and on the taxiway. And taxi to the active runway, and the pilot says we're cleared for takeoff, and we get on the active runway, and again the plane has a surge of its engines, and we hurtle down the runway very quickly because this is a very fast airplane. We take off, and this time we head west. And as we head west, every time we go across the time zone, we set our clocks back an hour. And we start doing that now already. We pass the time zone and then another. Now the plane just hurtles forward until a whole week, and then a month, and then 2 months. And then pretty soon a year, and then 2 years, and 3 years, and 4 years, and already the pilot is saying that we've been cleared for landing, we're descending now toward the airport that we took off from. And the landing gear and the flaps are down, and the plane touches down just into the present. It goes to the end of the runway and taxis towards the terminal, and this time when the plane stops, we can get off. And when you get off, you can find that you will be right back at the very same place that you took off from. Be back here. And we can spend some time when you get here just debriefing a bit about what you might have discovered. Share that. Some of it, we won't have time to share it all, but some of you may have something particularly interesting to share about this trip. Within the next, say, 15 or 20 seconds, allow yourself to be alert enough to be able to share however, whatever this experience was for you, if you'd like to share. It was a pretty clear message to me that at least three of you found this to be a very relaxing experience. Some of the rest of you, it's hard to tell what was going on. Anybody have anything you want to share about this experience for you? About?
I'm kind of wondering about, there's a group of friends of us that we traveled quite a bit, and those were the ones that took on the trip. And one of our friends passed away last September, and he was the one that was the most healthiest and laughing.
Did you talk to him about it?
No, I didn't.
Oh. Would you like to? Why don't you just spend a little bit while the rest of us debrief, going back and talking to him and then coming back and letting us know what he had to say. Can you do that? I think you can too, because you're just barely out of it. So just go right back onto the airplane and talk to him about anything you want to ask him, what he's happy about. And then have him share with you whatever it is, and then come back and share with us. So we'll sort of let you tune us out, and the rest of us will talk for a while, and we'll come back to you. Okay, so just go ahead and do that. Anybody else? Mm-hmm.
I found, being kind of a private person, that I didn't take as many with me as I wished I had.
Okay.
In the end, I wished I had brought on more.
So one of the regrets 5 years from now that you could have if you don't do something to change it is, you might not have as wide a circle of friends with you as you might like.
And relatives.
Okay, and what you might do is particularly think about those people who were not on the plane that you wished had been, and think about in these next 5 years whether you want to do something to contact those people and bring them on board, if you will. And how you might do that if you decide to do that.
I got my answer.
Yeah, would you share it?
He said he was very happy now.
Uh-huh. And is that all he shared? Is there
more? That's all he said, was how happy he was and has enjoyed himself.
Okay. And that's all you need from that?
Yeah, he shared that with his wife.
Well, that would be good. That would be good. I'm sure she would like to know that. I had a sort of a similar experience one time when it was a dream in the middle of the night that I had that woke me up of a friend who had died, who was the president of a kite flyers association. And sort of a remarkable man. And his message to me was that I should fly kites more often, go fly a kite. And that was a very important message for me. But also he shared how happy he was where he was. And I did tell his wife that, and it was painful for her. Knowing that this could be our own imagination, but still meaningful to share. I think it could be meaningful for her, for you to share that with her.
I have a kite here if you'd like to borrow it.
I know that now. And I'm thinking about flying this afternoon.
I mean, very well, Jamie, and thank you for the invitation. Though I also have discovered that most of these messages I take very metaphorically. So that I might be flying a kite while I'm doing something very different, like kayaking or something else. And that's my way of flying a kite too. But the very realism of it is also helpful.
Mm-hmm. One thing that was a surprise for me is that I tend to be a real people person and love groups and social events, and yet small number of people were on my plane, only five. And two, it was interesting, the balance. Two were taking care of me, and I was taking care of two. And so it just seemed like a good group. And I tried to bring on a doctor and a musician and things to make it more fun and more practical. And clearly the answer was no. But I guess one of my questions is if someone wasn't on the plane, and maybe you tried to address this just now, wasn't on the plane that you tried to bring on, but the answer was no, should we investigate that a little bit more?
Yes.
Does that mean a break in the relationship?
It could mean any number of things. But it is definitely worth looking at. You can ask yourself this question, why wasn't this person on board? And realize that whoever did come on board or didn't come really was your choice at this point, that you were totally able to bring them on board.
It's nice to have that freedom rather than responsibility.
Yeah. And then you might think, what is it in me that makes me feel that this person's not being on board would have made it a better trip? And was I right or wrong about that? What do I want to do about looking at that? And you'll come up with something. If we were doing this just one-on-one, we'd do this work right now. But I think you can do it on your own. It's important.
Jerry, I always think in guided imagery when you have to select people, that's always kind of mind-boggling because those people visually come to the front so fast. Mm-hmm. And then later, I sort of thought, my father's been dead 25 years, and I thought, gee, I just think I'll take him along. You know, and he was very quiet, and which he would have been, and was not a significant part of the journey, but he was there. And that, and I found myself being very happy with that. And but and other people I found wanting to seat them by the right people so that my friend Judy would meet my friend sister Anita, and I think they had a very nice journey. Oh, it's just crazy. You know, and I thought, I guess I won't worry about getting everybody on the plane that I might like.
But you know what that says to me, Mary Jo, is that there's a part of you that is a caretaker, too.
Let's not reinforce that.
But that is what you were doing, is making sure that sister so-and-so and Judy were taking care of them.
I've never been able to get them together, so this was my opportunity. That's funny.
She was her own stewardess.
Yeah, right.
In a way, I thought I took too many people along because I just didn't have a chance to even pay attention to someone and find out what was happening in the length of time. Maybe if I'd had more time, I wasn't working as fast as yours.
You can ask about whether that's a metaphor too, if you sometimes feel overextended and have quite enough time for everybody that you've included, or whether that is, you know, a fair metaphor for your life now, and if so, if you want to do anything different about that. That's what this meditation is about, is to just expose any area of your life that you want to look at.
You think sometimes some people are duty bound and they think, well, I better take so and so along because he's a member of the family.
I was careful about what family members I took.
What?
I was very careful about what family members I took, and that's really says where I'm at.
But what I'd also encourage you to be able to think about is the freedom to leave behind the people that aren't particularly people who make your life more abundantly happy. It's okay to leave some of those people behind if you choose to do that.
Some family members.
I had an anomalous thing that happened. I took Mary along, but I didn't take Jesus along on this particular flight. But when we got there, the very first person who appeared and started talking to me was a stowaway. It was Jesus. He got on without my invitation, there he was, you know, and he was sort of the main person. I did talk with Mary afterward, but she was in the second course, and you know, Jesus was right up front. He was there. He was the one I was asking the first two questions, and I asked a third question to Mary. And then there were a bunch of other folks around there, but I never got to them either. So,
how many of you in here find that this guided meditation took on a life of its own like that, where there was a stowaway, or there was somebody who disappeared that you brought on board, or something totally unexpected, as Raymond just mentioned? Anyone else?
The thing that was unexpected to me is that my plane trip, I was in India on a plane, and there was an Indian, sorry, as the stewardess type. And in the rest of the imagery, I can't see where that has any meaning. I mean, everything else was more ordinary about my life. The people I wanted were family, and the two who were not family were women models that I hold up and care a lot about. And so a lot of it made some perfect sense, but why immediately when I was playing request imagery?
Would you be willing to just ask her and find out why she's there?
Why, who's there? The Indian the stewardess?
Sure. Can you go back and ask her?
She wasn't very mean. She was just part of the imagery about why I happened to be in India on an Indian plane.
Well, I'd like to have
And I didn't like going east, so that was another interesting thing. And I've written about that. And the fact that you connected it to the future makes it quite interesting to me. I'm a Western person. I live on the prairie in Dakota, and when I think of comforting directions, it's west. And I know, you know, in Egyptian mythology, of course, that's death in the past. They make their holy of holies. The sepulchres, the tombs, are on the west side of Israel. But I don't really like, my daughter moved east, and I didn't like it when she moved west. So there were things that were interesting that I can kind of put metaphoric construction on, but I don't know.
What I've discovered, Karen, in dream work, and it's the same with guided imagery, is that these surprises are oftentimes really rich images when you start to investigate them. I just would invite you to do that while we still are talking, that while the rest share, that you just go back and talk to this flight attendant who is Indian and ask her why she's there and where she came from and what this is and see what happens. If you get an answer, then you could share it with us, if you were willing to. Would you be willing to do that?
I don't know if I can do that. I don't know if I can go back.
Kind of long. The interval of time now is kind of long.
Good. But sometimes, as in a dream, you know, we can recapture some of those images and do that, but, and you don't have to, but sometimes there's something there that's worth looking at.
Could you go back at your own leisure, just at another time?
Sure. Doing some journaling about this trip would help you do that a lot. Anybody else have anything to share? Clay?
Well, what's interesting for me, I've done a lot of too much flying, and I was on a 747, real big plane, and the heat to sit in the middle of the airplane. Mm-hmm. I always have this very specific place I sit, but in this particular case, I sat right in the middle, you know, with all the seat, with everybody tied around me, which was very strange. I, you know, it's like, I didn't know why I did that, but walked in when it was empty and 15-minute seat. But two of the people I brought on, one was Jesus and one was a late 1800s spiritual master named Yuxhwar. And I was going to talk to both of them individually for about a minute and decided to introduce them. And they both laughed at me because they're buddies. And said, we've been...
Isn't that an interesting image?
Yeah. Well, they just laughed. So we've been guiding you all along.
What was the name of the 18th century one?
Yuxhwar.
Yuxhwar?
Yeah, he's Indian spiritual master. Mm.
That is a very interesting metaphor, though, or it just says a lot. Anybody else have anything you want to share at all? Did anybody, yeah, Liv?
I invited friends of mine from way back up until now that I've been the closest to in every place I've, different place I've lived, and I try to keep in touch with them still, but so they're all on the plane with me, and it was just my family, my immediate family and my friends, and it was funny how they, after I started on that trip, some of those friends started disappearing. And the ones I had specifically thought of about bringing, they weren't there. And there was no one on the plane, really. But, and I didn't really choose to talk to anyone. I just sat in my seat most of the time. So that was kind of interesting.
So that the message could be that some of the people who have been in your life might not be in those next 5 years, that it'll be a different kind of life? How about the message from the reflection in the mirror? Did you get any knowledge from her about any of that?
No, not really. No, not very much.
Was she happy?
Kind of halfway at times. Mm-hmm. Different times. Not all the time.
I don't mean to probe, I haven't probed anybody else, I just have some interest because I know that this is something that's an issue for your life.
Mm-hmm.
Did she tell you about the best thing you did for yourself?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's helpful.
The worst. So.
That's helpful.
Good.
It's helpful to know both of those.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Good. Anyone else?
I had trouble with the worst thing. I couldn't get that answer really.
You know, I've done this hundreds of times, and a lot of times one-on-one, just in, you know, like a therapy session. But one time I did this with a group of counselors that I'm training to deal with severe trauma, and this is one of the exercises that I did with them. And one of the people in there just said, well, she said I didn't do anything wrong at all. That's what I thought at that point. She was one of these really happy people anyway. Mm-hmm. Anything else?
Add something to mine. I wasn't going to take Stan Linder because I knew Stan was gone. And yet, when we got on the plane, he was the strongest face there.
I'm glad he was. I bet his wife will be too. There are just an almost unlimited amount of things that we could do now for the next, I guess we've only got 10 minutes. So that cuts that down a lot of what we can do. A lot of what we can do would take more than 10 minutes. There are a lot of unfinished things that I meant to do. This is I am going to have a session tonight that the staff has asked for, that you're all invited to. A lot of the staff was working at the time that I was doing this back to the womb with Cindy and Maclea, and they've asked to do that, and there are some people who have volunteered to do that already. And we'll do that at 9 o'clock in this room. That'll be after Vespers. So you're all welcome to that if you want to. If anybody wants to volunteer, what I've committed to the staff is I'll stay as long as any volunteer. It's my last night here. We go back tomorrow.
Oh.
And there were a lot of things that I meant to do. Like, I did mean to do some dreams, just take some dreams in here and work with them. And we only did 2 fairy tales, and, you know, we had a whole bunch of people that could have had fairy tales to deal with. Is there anything that you'd like to do that we can do in about 10 minutes that you can think of any of the themes that we've looked at?
Well, I'd like to follow up on what you got, Sharon, in terms of dreams about people who have died and what they've communicated, because I had a similar dream about my father when he passed away and what state he was in. So I wonder if other people have had dreams about someone close to them that's passed away and that they've communicated how they are now.
How many people in here have had those kinds of experiences?
But I've had waking dreams like that. I
mean, or whatever, yeah.
So
there are several people who have had those kinds of experiences. Would anybody like to share what that meant to you, or what that is? Several of you raised your hand.
I could tell what I got. It's
sure.
Rather brief. But
sure.
About 2 weeks after my father died, on his 80, he died a week after his 81st birthday, and about 2 weeks after his death, I dreamed that I was looking down almost like in a Las Vegas casino from one of those ceiling cameras, you know. I was looking down at about a 45 degree angle, and it was as if that it was the dining room on the Love Boat, and my father was at the captain's table. Pretty good symbol right there. And everybody was dressed to the nines. I mean, all these handsome, very, very well dressed and coiffed people, beautiful clothing. And I saw my father at an incredible feast on the table. My father was in his white dinner jacket and his maroon bow tie and cummerbund, and he was sitting there, and he became aware of me looking down from the sort of spy in the sky, and he looked up and he said in his New York accent, he says, "Don't worry about me, kid, I'm having a wonderful time." It was just like the Love Boat. And I remember, and I also remember what the captain looked like. The captain was dressed in this impeccable white uniform with gold epaulettes and ribbons sort of down to, and medals down to here. And I remember he had grayish hair and sort of blue, steel blue eyes. And the metaphor for him and the other people at the table is everyone was very handsome. The women were handsome too. It was like everyone had chiseled features and wonderfully dressed and this incredible meal on the... and my father looked about 40 in that particular thing. So that was my experience. It made me feel real good about where he was and what he was up to. On the Love Boat.
Boy, the symbolism in that whole thing is so rich. But,
yeah.
The love feast.
Right. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I can't remember the details like that, but I do remember a dream that I had about my grandma several years after she passed away, and she was the most important person in my life. And I just remember waking up, and it was such a warm... I really felt like I had spent an evening with her. Such a warm... awakening, and feel like we had almost renewed some relationships. I think it was after the birth of my 2 children, who she never got to see, and we talked about them, and I just remember waking up with such a close feeling to her, and almost satisfied for a minute that, you know, I've been longing for her for so long and missing her and still mourning her after 5 years, but I almost felt satisfied that we had had a good time together.
I don't want to really, I do want to ask what you think. Do you think you did? I mean, do you think that's real or not? That you think you and she did share this evening together? Or?
I do. I don't have it at all.
Like she came to visit me or something?
Yeah, right.
Perhaps, you know, that's something that is just, we don't know. And so I would say perhaps. Perhaps I would hope that, you know, there's so much that I still want to share with her. And I would hope somehow it's like, oh, you know, Grandma, look at these wonderful boys that I have now. You know, what do you think? And I just have to believe that she knows what's going on, and she knows them, and that she watches them.
That is one possible way of looking at that experience. There are others too, of course, but that's one way of looking at that.
Perhaps. I guess we won't know until we get to that side.
We do know that at least in some way she was.
Because of just the satisfaction that I had, rather than waking up and missing her all the more, which is, I can't describe it, but I just felt satisfied. Sure. So.
Anyone else? Anything else?
Well, we all said this was kind of similar. We lost a son at age 29 about 10 years ago. And I didn't dream about him a lot early on, but I did fairly recently just dream that he was there with us in a very ordinary situation. And I also dreamed, I woke up with a real satisfied feeling. I didn't have a sad feeling, just a satisfied feeling that we had been together.
I've been a minister for 22 years, and that involves a lot of funerals. So death is something that I have dealt with a lot. There are many people who have shared with me during the course of those years things like a woman who had been married for some 40-some years to her husband. He had died. And she had ordered a gravestone for the grave. And this was the first time that she had gone to the grave to see the gravestone, because invariably the stone wasn't there. And she went to look at the gravestone, and she heard her husband behind her say her name, and then say, "Don't worry about me, I'm in a wonderful place." And she turned around and looked, and there was no one there. But she absolutely knows that he was just right behind her shoulder speaking to her. She has no question about that whatsoever, and she shared that with me, and just has no worries about him since that time. And many people have shared similar stories, either of the person who has died being with them, or there's another kind of way
but
that...
But not in a dream, you're saying.
Not in a dream, no one agreed. A friend of mine who is my age, actually he's 2 years younger than I am, his father-in-law died, and his own father had died much earlier, and so his father-in-law was very much like his father. He looked at this man as his father, even though it was his father-in-law. And the father-in-law had died of a heart attack. He had had the heart attack a week or so before he died, and then a second heart attack took him, but he was in the hospital, so they had time to talk, and he knew he might die because it was a severe first heart attack. And he had told this man my age that he could have all the tools that he'd had a hobby working with wood, and he had a lot of tools, and he had told this man, "If I die, or when I die, I want you to have all my tools." So this man had died and the funeral had happened, and so my friend went down to the basement where the workshop was and began to look at the tools. And he said all of a sudden there was a light in the room, and it came from behind him and was on his shoulder, and it didn't say anything, but he knew it was his father-in-law. I mean, he just knew it was his father-in-law, and he knew his father-in-law was saying to him that he was glad to give him these tools and that he should help take care of both his wife, who was this man's daughter, and his wife's mother, that was a kind of a task he was being asked to do. He said it happened non-verbally, and there was no window from which that light could possibly have come. But all of a sudden this warm light was there, and he said he knows that's who that was. Just many, many stories like that. Or otherwise, the stories that people tell me are not of the person who's died being there, but people when they die, like one woman who had been married for a long, long time, I don't know how long, but I think they'd had their 50th wedding anniversary. She was with her husband when he had a fatal heart attack that took him in just a matter of a few seconds. But during that time, he said to her, he said her name, and said, "Jesus is right there with you." And she knew he wasn't able to say anything more than that, and he was dead. But she found such comfort in that. She just knows in her own soul that Jesus is with her and that she needn't be feeling alone. And she hasn't gone through the tremendous loss that many people do, because she just knows Jesus, that he saw Jesus standing right beside her, and she knows that that's going to carry her through. Many, many, many stories like that, that people have come to me because I've been involved with the death of someone that they care about. And it's just too much to not think of it as having some reality other than imagination, even though that alone is powerful reality.
Have you talked about dreams with this group earlier, but I came a little bit late?
Not today, no.
The meaning of dreams.
I would like to close on that. When Cindy mentioned wanting to separate imagination from what was real, my experience in dreams is that frequently the symbols of the dream are more real than real life. Like, I'll just give you a quick instance, and then I think you get this room right here.
No, I'm in the next one.
Somebody will be coming in. We're at time. Our time is actually just about up right now, but here's a dream of a sophomore in college. She's in her bedroom looking out down the corridor, and a man is carrying what at first she thought was a cross coming toward her, and then she discovered it was a car key, a huge, huge car key, and he props her mouth open. As he begins shoving the key down her throat, she realizes this is her father, and she starts gagging. And then a woman, who she recognizes eventually as her mother, is coming down the hallway with a huge bundle of stuff, and she takes money and clothes out of these bags and starts stuffing it down this daughter's throat. And she wakes up gagging and choking.
Yeah.
Now in real life, what happened is this, which is not the same as the dream, except it's even more than what the dream is. I mean, the dream is so real here. Her parents left her a lot when she was in high school. They'd be gone on weekend trips, and she already had her driver's license, and her dad would come to her and say, we're going to be gone for the weekend, but here's the keys to the car. And the mother would come and say, here's some money, you can buy yourself some new clothes. And for the weekend, from Friday night till Sunday afternoon, she would be alone. She could drive the car and buy clothes. But she would get this feeling of kind of abandonment or whatever. It was just this feeling that, and what her, she said, they never stuffed a car key down my throat. They never stuffed money and clothes down my throat. I never gagged and choked. That dream is totally my imagination. It wasn't real. But, you know, it's very real.
Yeah, I'd say so.
Yeah. And that's the way dreams are. Every dream, if you start to investigate and do some dream work on, you'll find the reality of it to be exceedingly important. Every dream, even just little tiny unimportant ones, come from some place that your unconscious mind is the theory is trying to tell you something about yourself. And even though it's very, like fairy tales, those of you who are here, I told the story of this one guy with his fairy tale about the three little pigs who went to market or whatever. No little things in his life at all, but very real symbolism that was involved.
We were at the Holiness about 6 years ago, and there was a session about dreams, so I would encourage you to maybe check the tape library out. I don't remember the man's name, but it would have been June of 6 years ago, and that was talked a lot about symbolism and some stories from Zoom.
Well, I'm sorry we didn't have time to do that session, because I did have one planned on that, and it is fun, and it's real, but we just didn't have time for it. In fact, we're going to quit right now, because we've got someone else coming into this room. And I'm going to go here.
It's Billy.
Okay.
What about, person, and this isn't me, but a person who dreams about being able to fly, just without the benefit of an airplane or anything, just can fly over everybody else. Does all these wonderful things. What does that mean?
Wow. It means whatever it means to the person who dreams it, but primarily the theme has to do with freedom.
That person is freedom? Free?
That the being able to fly is a symbol of being free. Very frequently that theme in a person's life who has that dream has to do with freedom.
I had a lot of stress built dreams.
Laying on the ground.
Yeah.
And when we get into it,
my husband is the one that has all these free dreams. Mine are always just the opposite.
So I think I'll stay for the next one.
For Billy's, yeah. She does, that's really fun.
Is it?
Sure, no, I've gone to all of them.
It's very free.
I had a really scary dream last summer, two summers ago. I was at Lutherwood Camp in Bellingham, Washington, and I'd just gotten there, and I had this gruesome dream that my brother and I were in a car accident, and that I saw it visually, I saw him just totally bloody and just almost on his, almost dead. And I was really scared. In fact, I woke up crying. I woke up in the middle of the night crying and called my parents the time I woke up because I was so scared that it was so realistic to me. And I called them and they said, yeah, Nathan is coming to Chicago tomorrow from Iowa. And he's driving his old beat up Volkswagen Bug. And the only thing I could think of was telling him not to come. And they called him just to let him know, you know, be careful, whatever. And he ended up, his car died on the way. He had started out early, his car had died. And I'm thinking maybe something would have happened. It was just a horrible dream.
Those are exceedingly unusual dreams.
Yeah, I've never had anything like that. And I don't remember dreams much. So that, for me, that was very amazing that I've actually retained that one. Mm-hmm.
Many times dreams like that are about something else, and the symbols are about something else, but every once in a while people will have these dreams that are clairvoyant, where they're basically seeing something that hasn't happened yet, and it does happen, but people will have those dreams.
So realistic, I had to do something, I wouldn't have felt right about it, but I've never had anything like that either, so...